Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 381. Got a first-time guest joining me on the show. I've talked to him many times. He's a contributor at Fantasy Sports Degens. He also is a part of the Lucas Baseball Podcast. You can find him on Twitter at LucasBeery33. Lucas, how we doing, man?
I'm doing well, Bubba. Thanks again for having me on. Got a little DFS slate here that's about to start in a few hours on Thursday. Yeah. A couple of different spots to go to, and I'm excited to chat a little baseball before it starts.
Yeah, most definitely. That's the perfect time. We'll get done with about maybe, you know, half hour, 45 minutes, get maybe an hour to get final mix and matching in there. But we'll talk some fantasy baseball to kill the time up till then. But it should be a fun slate. I'm with you there. Before we get started, just kind of plug away, let everybody know. I kind of mentioned where they can find you, but what you've been up to, what you got going on.
Yeah. So my podcast partner, Lou Landers, and I, we do the Lucas Baseball Podcast. This year, we've just been doing waiver wire shows on Saturdays. We're pretty quick. We are only about a 20 to 30 minute show. Not that we can't go in more in depth, but just for time's sake, we know there's a lot of other shows out there. So we just kind of try to get in, you know, 5 to 10 names and get out. I hadn't done any articles until about 2 weeks ago, which kind of sucks because I wanted to do more on your site, but just because there was so much unstabilization of the stats, I just started feeling a little bit better about it. And I don't really do waiver articles per se or DFS. So that's why that content wasn't really there. But yeah, those are my two main things over at your site, Fantasy Sports Degens, and also Lucas Baseball Podcast under the Sports Crew Radio.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to have you over there. I've talked with Lou before as well. So a lot of good stuff you guys got going on. Everybody make sure you go check it out and get the Lucas podcast and the articles at Fantasy Sports Degens. But I know you do a lot of you do all fantasy baseball, all the good stuff. But I know you like dynasties as well. Like we've talked before in our chats and everything about deals. So this one's got to be a fun one for you. Wander Franco finally got the call a couple days ago. Everyone's got such high expectations. He obviously goes crazy in his debut, does everything everybody could hope for. Then has an overnight. That's going to happen. That's baseball. What's kind of your overall thoughts on him going forward this season? Are you like super optimistic like some, or are you going to be like cautious as well?
I was not sure as far as him being a stud coming out of the gates, just because I'm not sure if the stolen base totals are going to really be huge. I'm not sure if he's really going to be doing 20 steals in his first few years, since he has bulked up quite a bit. He's a big guy. And as far as his home runs, obviously there has been some questions surrounding his launch angle and more of a ground ball tilt, even though he's got elite plate discipline. But whenever you watch him, there's just something different about him. Kelnick kind of had that, but had a sluggish start. Interesting thing, Bubba, is that he's actually available in an online championship that I'm participating in.
Really?
I was researching this afternoon, and he wasn't drafted. That's what it was. He just wasn't drafted.
Okay. Well, and an OC is 12 teams. So yeah, I guess that makes a little more sense.
Plus there was just concerns of, are they going to bring him up and only give him 4 or 5 days a week? Since they are the Rays, I know it's an elite prospect. It's the best prospect in the game, but that was a concern. I mean, even some people were concerned about that with Meadows. myself included, stupidly. He's a stud, but you know, now that Wander's up, I do think he can pace for 25 plus homers with a 300 batting average. So I think he's definitely right there in that stud category from day one. Now he could flame out somewhat, but I'm even more excited now that he's up than I was previously.
Yeah, it was weird because, you know, we saw Taylor Walls get called up. So everyone's like, oh, Franco this, Franco that. And then everyone's like, well, Duran's going to get called up before him. That guy got all of a sudden Franco jumps over Duran. So that was cool to see. And it was the same idea as like, we want to see Franco up or Franco up, but we also want to see him play every day. So the fact they brought him up makes you feel like he's going to play every day, which is very, very good to see. And it was interesting, like the first game he's out there at shortstop. Or no, was it third base both games or shortstop? It might have been third base both games, actually.
Yeah, he was third base.
Third base both games. That's what it was. But he hit second in the order, hit third in the order. We know the Rays like to move things around a lot, so we'll still see what happens. Because, you know, you still have Joey Wendell. You still have Brandon Lau. You still have – they have so many embarrassments of riches, basically, in that team. But it seems like just the fact that he's been starting at third base, which I think surprised many of us the first day when he expected, you know, he's going to come up and play second or short, at least somewhere in the middle infield. So that's good to see. They're willing to try that. We'll see how things keep going. The bright side is he's going to be in the AL East most of the time, and that's some fun ballparks to hit in and a couple just bad rotations to hit against. So there could be some fun coming his way. So
absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited. So
yeah, we'll have to see. And I can't wait. I'll have to like message you or something. You'll tweet it out or something. I can't wait to see how much he goes for in that OC.
Yeah, that's the beat calling Weatherwax with Paul Spohr and Justin Mason.
That's a loaded league. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm struggling in that league, and let me tell you, I think about that one just as much as my good leagues. It just ticks me off, man. But it's all good.
Yeah, you can say you're struggling, but then when you look at who's in that league, you went into the lion's den in that one. So not saying that you're not qualified, obviously, but I mean, it's just one slip up, and any talented guy is just going to go. And that's just how. If you have the injuries or this, that, the other. And everyone's competing for saves and the injury bug and everything. It's just and Fab's so wild. We talk about it on so many shows. You guys talk about it probably on your waiver wire show. There's so many things that it's from league to league. It's so different. You don't know what to do. So you're throwing your bids out and praying it hits. In one league, it might hit by over $60 or something. In one league, you lose by $60. And so the Franco one will be interesting to see how that one goes. We'll have to see. I know Mason and Spohr will talk about it quite a bit on their show. Yep. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe you can get some insider info by listening in to the sleeper and the bust. A bad one here. And this one, people say Byron Buxton's injury prone, and I can see the argument from time to time, and it stinks. But this time he gets hit in the hand, and it could be because there's no sticky stuff. Who knows? Who knows what it was? But he's going to be out for quite a while again. So this is a big, big bummer. You know, that we nothing we can do about that. The question I have in play for you is, you know, Max Kepler just came back from the IL. He's actually hitting pretty good already since coming back. You have Kirilloff, who they can play at first base, but Sano's maybe showing signs of hitting the baseball now. Trevor Larnach, who's hitting really well. How are you approaching this outfield situation with so many hands and only so many positions?
This is definitely somewhat of a death knell for their team. Obviously, it sucks for fantasy owners, and Buxton's actually my favorite player in the game. Just I've been on him in Dynasty for many years, and it's been a tough relationship there. But as far as the Twins, I think they're going to have to be forced to put in Kepler in center field. That's pretty terrible for their pitching staff. And it's the good thing is if we're going to be optimistic about this, it is going to secure Larnach in that role. I mean, this team had Rob Refsnyder out in center field, and he was hitting, obviously. He had some good numbers there, but it's just not the Twins season. But surprisingly, they're relatively high up in the standings, better than I expected, just with a little hot search. But I think you will see Kepler in center field.
Yeah, I think that's what you're going to do. And I think they're going to want to try to trade Sano if they can. That'll help with a lot of this. So I think that's one angle they're going to try to do. Then you just move Kirilloff to first. You have Kepler and Larnach in the outfield taking those two spots up, and you make it work. Because even when certain players were coming back, Larnach was still hitting third, fourth, fifth. Like they wanted to keep him in there. Obviously, we know what Kirilloff can do. It's a very, very loaded young team right now. So it's fun to see. So hopefully they keep that going. Before we get to the next question here, we have some guys in the chat here, so I want to bring it up first. Randy Haynes says, just tell us what you're bidding on Wander Franco. you might have to go somewhere else, Randy, for that one. But Will Garofalo, he's a great guy, and he says, are you a big MLB The Show guy?
Actually, I I have to apologize to anybody that I played MLB The Show with last year. I just got started during the pandemic, and I was playing in a loaded league with guys like Will, who smoked me. I think I might have even rage quit on him just because it was like 13-0, and I couldn't, like, he knew if it was a ball, wouldn't swing. If it was a strike, it was a home run, and got crushed in that league. But I play a little bit now. But and Randy actually has been dominating that online championship. He's actually in first place, right above Spore, I believe, unless they flip-flopped.
Well done, Randy. Well done. And yeah, I wish I could play video games. I used to play them all the time. I see all you guys playing them. I was like, yep, I just haven't found the timing to do it just yet. One of these days, I tell myself, one of these days. San Francisco Giants, near and dear to my heart, and Brandon Belt's near and dear to my heart, but the man just can't stay healthy this year. It's absolutely horrible. He scored yesterday, but as he was running the bases, messed up his knees, going right back to the IL. Another injury for Brandon Belt. Now, you know, Darren Ruff came back recently. Lamonte Wade Jr. got sent down, but he was playing first base when Belt was hurt last time. Tommy La Stella is going to start a rehab assignment very shortly. What's your thoughts on what they do? Because I have my thoughts as a guy that watches them 24/7. But what's your thoughts on what the Giants are going to do with the first base position?
Yeah, I know you're going to fill in here, and you're more the expert on this team than myself. I was quite disappointed to see Lamonte Wade Jr. get sent down. He was hitting pretty well. He's always been a strong walk rate guy. So perhaps they give him a shot if Darren Ruff isn't doing a whole lot. Darren Ruff's kind of old. He was actually hitting decently before he tore his hamstring. But I think they'll give Ruff a shot. And perhaps if he's scuffling and Belt's out for a little while, maybe they bring Wade back up.
Yeah, before when Belt got hurt the first time, before Ruff got hurt, they played Ruff every day. He was just lefties platoon. Then they just played him every day because he was hitting, like you said. So I think it is going to be his job to start with. Yeah. They could always bring Wade up to do a platoon situation, give another left-handed bat there. That's an option. I think they'd love to wait and get La Stella back and do that. Yeah. So it stings because I wanted Lamont Wade too. And like I went to the game last Sunday. Wade was leading off. Things are great. Apparently that afternoon they put him back to AAA. Didn't report on it until later Monday. So, of course, I have him in my lineups and no other outfielders because of injuries. So I have Lamont Wade in my TGFBI lineup this week for the entire week. It's absolutely outstanding. So that's that was full tilt. So maybe they call him up and he gets like two games this week, and that'd be sweet. I'd be a big fan of that. I'd be like just the Joy Luck Club. But, yeah, I think it's going to be the Darren Ruff show, and that's what we're going to have to hope for now. And if it is, he's worth a flyer on the waiver wires. Like, he really is. Like, we're going to get some waiver wire talk later, but – Darren Ruff's been quite productive so far this season. And if you're in deep leagues, I'm not saying 12-team leagues, but if you're like in a 15-team league, you couldn't give him a shot if you need him, because he's gonna have, should have outfield and first base eligibility by now. So something to keep in mind.
Absolutely. I actually had Ruff in a league the night I got him a few days before he got hurt in a deep 20-team, 70-man roster daily league. Perfect for that.
Perfect.
So yeah. It's like, you know, you plug him in there, and his is a slug league too. So his slugging percentage is just like, all right, this is a perfect guy. And then hamstring, and but hopefully he can get it going. We'll see.
Yeah, I remember that injury so bad. I'm sitting here. I might have been recording when it happened because I always have a game on or something on the TV. And it was a single that big man tried to turn into a double and popped his hamstring on. I'm like, dude, you shouldn't even have like thought about that. Just trot to first base. And nope, he tried to make more of it than he could, and it just backfired royally. So. Yeah, hopefully he's good to go, because like you said, he was crushing it, and I like that one quite a bit. Aaron Civale, he's had a very, very up-and-down season. Like, if you go look at his game logs, you look at his peripherals, certain games he's just dominant, striking out the world. Other games he can't strike out anybody because he's pitching to contact and getting shelled. It's really, really odd with Aaron Civale. Well, now he's got a fractured middle finger. So he's going to be our sprained middle finger. He's going to be out 4 to 5 weeks at least. First off, are you dropping Aaron Civale anywhere?
I actually have him in TGFBI, and there's no way I'll be dropping him. It's only about a 4 to 5 week injury, supposedly. Obviously, it can take quite a bit longer. As far as him actually getting wins and decisions, you're probably looking more 6, 7, 8 weeks. But with how he's pitching, I'm not going to drop him until I truly have to. I'm not too banged up in that league, but if you do have to drop him, I totally get it.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. Now, you look at the Cleveland Indians now, and their rotation was once glorious. We have Bieber on the IL. You got Savali on the IL. You have Puka Shells on the IL. They're all gone. So when you're looking at things now, Tristan McKenzie, JC Mejia, Quantrill might get more starts. We have Morgan who's starting. Any of these guys interest you?
Actually, a couple of them do. Okay. Like I said, in that don't mean to refer to the same league or just my leagues again.
No, it's fine.
I did grab that Sam Hintages. Mm-hmm. He's been pitching a little bit better of lately, and I strictly picked him up for the fact that this is a tremendous development team. Obviously, you know, Plesac somewhat came out of nowhere, and Savali had a decent track record in the minors, but they weren't big names. So this is a team that develops players. And Quantrill is another guy that I do have queued up to answer one of the questions. I like him quite a bit as a guy who could break out. He's been pitching well lately. Outside of that, though, Morgan and Mejia, I've looked at them a little bit, but as of now, they need to show me more until I'm interested.
No, I like that. And Quantrill's a guy that I liked when he was in San Diego. I had him in some, I'm on like two dynasty leagues. I think I had him in one of them. And then when they traded him, I got my hopes up, and then they didn't want to start him in Cleveland. But now he's getting his chance. So I'm with you. Like the pedigree is obviously there, and he's shown signs of it from time to time. So maybe a run with no one kind of looking over his shoulder will be kind of nice to see what he can get. Speaking of a guy that has the prospect pedigree, but has had trouble figuring it out of late, Keston Hira, he's been up, he's been down, he's been up, he's back though. Because Dan Vogelbach, similar to Darren Ruff, should not be trying to run really fast. It's just not what they should be doing. So Vogelbach to the IL with a hamstring injury. Keston Hira called back up on his first game. He went 0-for-2 with a walk and no strikeouts. That's a point in the right direction. His strikeout rate, I think DVR tweeted it out, because his first time back to the minors, he's still striking out a ton. So he gets called back up, strikes out a ton. This last trip in the minors, he was down to like a 24, I think, or 26% strikeout rate, which is much better for Keston Hira. So are you more optimistic this round? Because he's on a lot of waiver wires right now.
Yeah, I'm not the most optimistic about him, just because if you do look into his numbers, there's nothing that's exciting except for his prospect pedigree. So it's a pure leap of faith. Now, if he is available and you need a boost of power, sure, go grab him, but keep your expectations in check. And I probably would not start him right away. I'd make him prove himself on my bench.
Yeah, we're very similar in that one, because I have had a couple people like hit me up in the DMs asking, hey, what do I do with Hira? Do I go pick him up? This and that. I'm like, I get it. Like, you're looking at the pedigree and hoping it hits. You remember what he did a few years ago, but I added him earlier this year, like prospectively. I got him cheap at least, thank goodness. And I've dropped them, and I'm not picking them back up. I told people, you know, if you want to do it, go for it. I'm going to sit and make him prove it this time. Like, if I miss out on him, I miss out on him, so be it. I'll save that money for other things I know I need at the time instead of speculating on a guy that I hope does it out. So, yeah, it's tough to see. I'm hoping he does. Really do. But it's he's really got to show it. And I know it's just a small sample, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek, but the fact he did not strike out on the first night gives me a little optimism, to say the least. Last one I got for you here, George Springer. He's back from the IL. Like, we've seen Randall Grichuk get a day off. We know before Rowdy Tellez got days off. What are you doing with some of these outfield pieces with George Springer back?
Yeah, with Springer, it's really exciting to see that they're not just going to simply put him as the DH. They put him in center field, which proves his health. I have him in 1DC, and that's been tough. But I think Rowdy Tellez is just down on the farm until there's a need that pops up. Outside of that, I think it's pretty straightforward. So he's just out of the picture.
Yeah, unfortunately, he is out of the picture, which I'm with you on that one. I'm a big Rowdy fan, but it's not looking pretty with that one. Maybe they'll trade Grichuk, but then again, we got to see Springer stay healthy. We thought he was healthy the first time, didn't pan out, but that very, very talented offense gets even more talented, which is very, very nice. A couple minor notes here. Ketel Marte left with an injury. They're hoping a hamstring injury. They hope they don't have to put him on the IL. Ronald Acuna is day-to-day with a back injury. And Marcus Stroman has a hip injury, but they hope to not put him on the IL as well. All right, Lucas mentioned a couple recent articles at Fantasy Degen. So we're just going to go over a couple players real quick and get it. He did a Fantasy Baseball Stocks Up edition for hitters and Stocks Down edition, basically 2 months into the season. Guys that are, you know, way, way performing well, and guys aren't performing so well. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts, for those that have not read the article, on, like, are you optimistic going forward on some of these players, or is it just like, you know what, they peaked, like, if you can trade, sell them type thing, or what's your thoughts on these? And I'm going to start out with one in your Stock Ups edition is Marcus Semien. He's been outstanding this year, like really, really good. There's no hiding that. Some people were talking about towards the end of draft season, and he's leading off for the Blue Jays, a very good team to lead off for. Are you a believer in we get something close to this the rest of the way? Or are you thinking, you know what, if you can sell him, sell him?
Man, this is actually, this was one of the trickier ones. As you know, I broke down about 14 different hitters, mm-hmm. just as, or actually 13, I didn't do two catchers, but Semien was one of the trickiest ones. I mean, if you look at his career outside of the 2019 awesome third and MVP season, and this year, it's not even been 100 WRC plus. Obviously, he's been able to provide some steals, some good homers, and he's hitting in an insane lineup. So it's going to be very tricky to trade Semien. But I do think he's going to have to come down a little bit off this pace, just given his career. I mean, there is a possibility he's found a new level as just a better hitter. He worked his butt off working with Ron Washington to become a better player. But if you have a need and you can get some pitching for him for an SP2 that you really love, it might be tricky to get an SP1 for him. But in the right circumstances, I could see you dealing him away.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I love Marcus Semien. I love the fact that he's got like such good eligibility throughout the diamond for you, a second base and shortstop, which is really, really nice. But you also got to wonder, like, how long is this? He's hit 18 home runs already this year. His career high at 33 in that one season, but mm-hmm. he's usually about a 15 to 20 home run guy. He's hitting great average wise. He's stealing bags. His career high in stolen bases is 14. He already has 9. Like, he's having a career year. Very simple, easy to say. And the rest of the season projections project him to get another, like, the bat X has him hitting 18 more home runs, 6 more steals, hitting .263. That's outstanding if that works. But it's I'm with you. I'm waiting for that other, like, a big slump to happen or something. But
I do think the park upgrade from Oakland is a big factor to an extent. And also, like you said, he's running with the 9 steals. I mean, the dude wants a paycheck and a big one. So that's kind of where you're at.
Yep, 100% there. One player that I was 100% wrong on, I pretty much just avoided in all drafts this year, was Chris Bryant. I was just like, you know what? I'm not buying it. He looks broke. Like, the shoulder might be still bugging him or something. Well, he's got 14 homers. He's hitting .278. He's mashing left-handed pitching. He's doing everything right now. But it's like the Cubs offense still isn't overwhelming like it should be for that talented of a roster, and they might trade him. So what's your thoughts on Bryant the rest of the season?
Yeah, Bryant, I think it's just really been health issues the guy's had. He's had some shoulder issues, and last year he was god-awful. It was only 34 games, but I think really he's a really talented player. I was off him too, just because of where he was going. I was looking more to add some stolen bases in that range, and plus it was just, you know, you come off of that horrible year. Certain guys like JD Martinez, it can just feel a little bit better to buy back into. But Bryant, adding in the health issues that he's had. But like I said, outside of that 2020 year, he's been a very, very good hitter. I do buy it, actually, with Bryant. Could get traded. That could boost his morale, too, to fight for a playoff spot. But I do like Bryant a lot rest of season.
Yeah, no, it's – yeah, I was completely wrong on him. Big, big swing and a miss. So – that's one I will take the L on, and he looks pretty darn legit. He looks healthy. I'll say that much.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Dodgers real quick for another guy that I was like, you know, I can't do it. I get the eligibility. It's a thing I like to draft for, and Chris Taylor has it, and that was huge. But I was always concerned with playing time, and there's a part of the year where the playing time was still in question. He wasn't getting the regularity that, you know, you might want from a fantasy player, but he is now, and he's being very, very productive with it. Like, he's on pace for, you know, close to 20 home runs and, you know, 15 to 20 stolen bases right now, which is outstanding. Are you buying into Chris Taylor the rest of the way?
I am. Actually, unlike Bryant, I was able to get a handful of Chris Taylor shares here and there. I know the playing time is a little concerning just because, I mean, it is for almost every Dodger. They all get days off. It's just the embarrassment of riches. Mm-hmm. But considering the fact he was able to chip in like 10 to 15 plus steals and just whenever they had an injury, he would get a bump in playing time. I did go after him. The on-base percentage has been almost insane. It's been almost 400. It's just been insane. So I love what he's been up to so far, and I would buy in if you're getting him at a pretty decent rate.
A couple more to ask you about here. Everybody fell in love with Adelis Garcia to start the season because he just took the world by storm, crushing home runs, another 2 home run night a couple nights ago. But those were his first home runs in a bit. He's hit quite a rookie wall, one would say. They're making adjustments to him. He has to adjust back. Obviously, he wasn't going to continue the tear he was on to start the season, especially with all the swing and miss in his swing. But there's still belief there's a lot of power there. What are you doing with a guy like Adelis Garcia the rest of the way?
Yeah, this is a guy I completely missed out on. I don't even, he was available for, I believe, all 29 teams to claim free of charge off waivers. So that goes to show you he was a surprise to every team in the league. This is a profile I'm completely out on. 30% strikeout rates, does not buoy it whatsoever with walks. I mean, he's a 4% walk guy. The steals, it does make him quite a bit more appealing. But whenever he goes cold, you're going to see, you know, 100, 100, 100 slash line, and maybe he runs into one and that's what he does. But, not the kind of guy I like personally.
Yeah. It's a tricky profile. Like, I think if you could have traded him a few weeks ago was the time to do it. Cause now I think more people are kind of seeing what we've seen the last few weeks. He might have a hot streak here and there, but I think we're kind of seeing the guy we're going to get the rest of the way, which is going to show a lot of power. But a very low batting average and some massive slumps that could ding you up from time to time. So keep that in mind with Adelis Garcia. Last one I've got for you here. Mitch Haniger was, you know, banged up the last few years. We got very excited because he's coming into the year healthy. He's swinging a pretty good bat overall, but he's getting a little banged up again. But really, he looked like the Mitch Haniger of older for a while. Are you buying in on Mitch Haniger continuing to produce this year? Are you concerned with what we've seen maybe the last week or so with his health and just overall production?
Yeah, I actually, I like him a lot more than I did heading into this year. I mean, the guy had some ruthless injuries that shall not be named on this podcast. And he'd missed a lot of time. He was amazing in 2018, but that's quite a few years ago now. That's about 3 years removed. But this year, he's kept it right back up. He doesn't really provide steals, which is one reason I wasn't interested. And plus, he just didn't really have that standout tool. But where he was going, he didn't need that. He just needed a clean bill of health and to hit three for the Mariners and to hit plenty of homers. And he's done that and then some. So it's it was a miss on my part. And I like him a bit. But like you said, the health is a little concerning.
Yeah, the health concerning. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to be great. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. It's just like I feel like the other shoe's going to drop, and we kind of saw it here recently. We got a little banged up again, and I don't know if it's because he plays too hard. We've seen it with a lot of players or what it is, but if he stays healthy, I think he's going to be really good the rest of the way. And that Mariners offense is going to be sneaky interesting. Like they have a lot of off nights, but that's because they're so young. But it's a very talented young team. You got like Ty France. You have Shed Long, who's showing some signs of life. Crawford's playing great. Maybe Taylor Trammell gets more comfortable. You've seen him have some good games in with the bad because it's just a bunch of young guys trying to figure it out. And Jared Klenick's going to be back up eventually. And I feel much more confident he's going to be better the second time around type thing, just getting his bearings together. So it's a good young team, a very good young team. They're probably another couple years off, but I think they're going to have some nice streaky situations there. All right, let's talk about your Stocks Down article, which has probably some more names that I actually drafted on this one than some other ones. But we already mentioned Keston Hiris, so we don't have to go there. But Yasmani Grandal is a very, very fun one because when you look up Yasmani Grandal, depending on your league format, he's great or he's not. Like I have him in Tout Wars where he's an OBP league, and his 383 OBP because he walks 25% of the time is outstanding. If you have a batting average league, he hits .172. Which is crazy for a guy that's usually at least 240-ish, give or take, most of his career. He's hitting with okay power. He's doing everything else, but his average is crushing you. If you're like in a batting average league, Lucas, what are you doing with a guy like Yasmani Grandal, who, like I said, you weren't getting him for steals anyway, so he's checking the boxes everywhere else.
Yeah, this is a guy that I put him on my Stock Down, and Bubba, it felt weird because he's been decent. He's not killed you, but he's not really helped you. And I mostly just wanted to talk about his profile. I mean, whenever I first started writing him up, he was a 29% walk rate and like a 26% K rate. His walks have come down, but the guy just doesn't swing the bat. His swing percentage was like 28%, and there was nobody else in the 20s. It was like 30%. It's like the closest guy. He just stands there. He's hoping to get the walk. I mean, the 172 batting average is not helping you out for the draft price you paid, like around 115, 130. If you can trade him away and fill a need, I think you might be able to go out and find just an empty power guy who is obviously probably not going to outproduce Grandal, but you can use Grandal's name value to your advantage kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, that's probably the best you have because you're not going to drop him. That's the problem. It as much as he might be a hindrance to you, he's still going to produce power. He's still in the White Sox lineup, so he's eventually going to wake up again and score runs, you'd think. Mm-hmm. Like there's the Max Stassis of the world. There's the Ryan Jeffers. There's a couple of guys like Luis Torrens is hitting all of a sudden. So like those are the guys you'd be picking up. Are you like picking them up for a guy like Yasmani Grandal? Probably not. And that's where it gets very, very like if you have a bench spot, I guess, but you know, benching a catcher is never fun. That just feels like a wasted bench spot. So it's tough. It's really, really tough with Grandal. And it's one of those you're going to kind of stomach and hope that you can make up batting average somewhere else type deal.
I do think, though, that you could turn him into something pretty useful. And like you said, you just mentioned off like 3-4 guys that have been hitting, and you can go streamer week to week with Torrens, who's hitting homers and DFS for you. And, you know, Stassi was awesome for a little while. I think he's still going. But yeah, I think that's kind of what I probably would do, because he is a big name. People might pay something pretty good for him.
Yeah, just become a used car salesman and start sales pitching the snot out of his past history. And he's on the White Sox, and you know, if you look at the Bat X rest of season projections, they still haven't hit 11 more home runs. They haven't hit 228. So if he hits 228 the rest of the way, that's what you're trading for, not the 172. So you use your angles here and try to make a sale, because the talent's there. That swing rate is comical, like you said. For a professional, he's like you said, he's literally up there. It feels like looking for a walk, which. It's almost impressive that he's hit 11 home runs doing that, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a guy that going into draft seasons, I started out, it was all the Javi Baez show for me. And I wish I stuck with that. But I kept telling myself after a while, okay, I can't put all my eggs in one basket just in case something happens. So I said, okay, who's getting drafted right around Javi Baez? Oh, Gleyber Torres. Gleyber Torres, you know, he's got some power. It's declined a bit, but he still has 20-plus, 25-plus homers. Going to hit for an okay average, all these things. I'll take it. Well, Gleyber Torres has not been very good. So what's your look on Gleyber Torres as you dug into him on this one?
Oh, man. This is a guy that's kind of followed the Ben Simmons career path with Torres.
That's
I like Torres a bit. I mean, I was fairly sold. Not that he would hit 38 homers. And me and you both last year wrote him up as a huge fade at 35, but at 70 –
exactly.
That felt too good to pass up.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, and I know, like I said, you and I were both on him as a bust last year. We avoided him properly, and he dealt with COVID. There was health issues that were pursuing from that, just like Moncada, and the power's gone. The exit velocities are horrible. He's not hitting the ball very good. His OBP is good. So if you're in an OBP league and you're a rebuilder in a dynasty, I do think that he will find a way to hit more home runs. But right now the power is gone. I think I can't expect it to come back this year. Anything can happen. It's baseball, but man, this is a tricky one. And this rest of the season, I don't see much power coming back.
And that's kind of how I feel with you is going into draft season. The price was right compared to the previous years, which made me more optimistic to give him a shot. And then secondly, it's like you have the COVID things, you have all these things. And I believe eventually the power is going to come back. But then, like, you look at you mentioned his barrels and his hard hits and all that. His hard hits have always been kind of surprisingly low, but he at least barrels it up a lot. And he's not even barreling the baseball. And that's where it's just like, because his max exit velocities are pretty much in line with his whole career. Mm-hmm. And he's just not doing it consistently enough. And he relies on pulling that ball a lot for the home run. So it's a tough profile. It's a great stadium to do it in. He's going to might be gone from that stadium pretty soon, which could be interesting. But he's one of those guys that's really frustrating because you can see the talents right there. It's just not breaking through, and I don't know what it's going to take anymore. Alec Baum started out the year pretty good. Massive slump at one point was platooning with Brad Miller at third base. Like, people let that sink in for a second there. He was platooning, but he's starting to hit again. The power has not shown up like we saw in 2020 when he got called up. But he had 4 hits the other night. He's slowly getting it going. Are you buying in maybe on a second half Alec Baum resurgence here?
No, I'm not. I do think he'll have a solid career in front of him. But the discipline is tough. I mean, 27% Ks, 5% walk. He doesn't even necessarily get you on base to score some runs whenever he's ice cold. He's got a 282 on base. Like you said, the fact that the team didn't even believe in him enough to give him full-time run, maybe they were getting him his head right for a little while. But another guy doesn't really provide steals. Was supposed to be a big batting average guy. Yeah. But I think ultimately that 410 BABIP from last year just over-exaggerated his draft cost a little bit too much.
Yeah, it's rough right now, to say the least. And like, you look at his X stats last year where he overperformed. You look at his X stats this year where he's underperforming. It's like they kind of all lead closer to the same area that might show who he is. He's maybe more of a 275, 280 guy. So maybe he improves that way this year. But power-wise, like, they're showing room for growth. it's just a matter of you got to barrel the ball up more, kid, and you got to attack the zone a little more. So we'll see how it goes there with Baum. Like, I'm wondering, just because that ballpark, as it warms up, it could get lively for him. And, you know, like you said, the term I like to use also, you never know, because baseball mm-hmm. things happen. Like, it's just crazy. I always make the comment, like, 1-for-4 is kind of good these days, but is that 1-for-4 a single or 1-for-4 a home run? That's what differentiates everything. And that's just like literally just a few marks on a baseball on a bat that changes all that. So yep. it's such a wild game that we enjoy kind of trying to predict. But another guy that's really, really scuffling and is pretty much, I want to know if you think he's droppable, but Jorge Soler, he's got 6 home runs on the year. You know, the walk rate's in sync with the usual, a strikeout rate's kind of in sync with the usual, hitting .183 though. It's been a really rough go for Jorge Soler. What do you think going forward this season? And if you don't like him, is he droppable?
Man, that's another reason why that online championship team is struggling. Soler has just brought things down, and man, it's just been tough. I wouldn't drop him. I mean, obviously he hit 48 bombs just 2 years ago in a very tough stadium to do so. Obviously you're not going to even come close to even 30 homers rest of the season, even 25. He's only got 6 so far in 66 games, but I would wait to see for signs of life. I would wait till at least probably mid-July, maybe August to cut him. Maybe a smarter guy than me would have cut him earlier, but for me, I'm going to stick with him just because he can get red hot and he can just go wild with some homers, hopefully.
Yeah, my 2 cents on that, like in a 12-team league, you can. I could see 15, definitely not. Like, hopefully you can stash him on the bench. In a 12-team league, if you have bench spots, yes, you staff him. But with the injuries and all, you never know. Mm-hmm. It's just it's hard to start him right now. I'll say that much. Because like, I have him places too, and it's just like he's one of the guys. I'm like, okay, I went and drafted this angle first. I need a power guy. He's sitting here. I'm going to take Soler, hit me 30 to 35 home runs. We're going to call it good. He can't hit anything right now. So massively disappointing for the leagues I do have him in. So I feel your pain. Definitely feel your pain on that one. Last one I'm going to bring up here is Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who had a monster 2020 season. I even had a bold prediction that he would outproduce Teoscar Hernandez this year. That's not going so strong. But, you know, struggled early. We saw a little bounce back from him about a month or so ago. He's quieted down again. Now with George Springer coming back, he could end up being one of the casualties in this situation. So what's your thoughts on Gurriel going forward?
Yeah, Gurriel is another guy. The profile I'm just not a huge fan of, just because he doesn't really walk at all to help his decently sized strikeout rate. I mean, he's 23% strikeout rate for his career, and he walks around 4 or 5% of the time. Some guys I can live with that if it's a Tim Anderson who's going to give you some stolen bags, but for a guy like Gurriel, where you're just relying on batting average and home runs and run production, of course, that's just not the kind of guy I go for. He has turned it on a little bit lately. He's kind of helped correct his numbers, and he's another one of these guys. Players like yourself and I, we play DFS, so we see when these guys get on hot streaks, and Gurriel is another hot streak kind of guy. But for this year and just the Toronto lineup, I think, kind of made him a little overpriced in the draft season. Everyone wanted a part of that, and he's fairly expensive, but rest of the season, probably wouldn't trade for him, but it wouldn't surprise me if he got onto a heater.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with him. Like, I'm stashing him everywhere I can right now, mm-hmm. just because I'm waiting for that hot run to come. The power production, the ability just to get on bases, he'll hit for an average. Like, he does almost everything you want. He might not steal a ton of bases, but he's going to be productive. So I'm with you there. He's been one that I've just been holding on to, like when it's like, okay, drop him or him. And I'm just like, I'm keeping Gurriel. I'm doing it as long as I can. Yeah. Eventually, you just have to in certain leagues because it's been an insane year with injuries. And, you know, a lot of the time, most listeners have IL spots, but like we'll talk NFBC or something and you're out. Or injuries are so bad, you have 2 IL spots and you have 4 guys on the IL. So what are you doing with, like, it's a wild, wild west out there when it comes to all this. And he's a guy I'm trying to stash as long as possible.
I get that.
All right, let's talk some potential waiver wires for the upcoming week here, as it's we're almost at the halfway point in the season, which is pretty crazy to think about. We're getting really darn close to that. And just kind of for fun here, obviously a lot can change the next 48, 72 hours with injuries and call-ups and all kinds of stuff. But early on here, what are some we'll go back and forth. We each made a list of 4 or 5 potential targets this week. Who's one of your targets you're looking at going in?
So he's not always available. I kind of have like a great at worst and kind of a worst list here. But if Adrian Hauser's hanging out there, he does get a start against the Pirates. He's been able to be pretty good this year. He's a sub 4 ERA. I know that doesn't take you as far as it used to with the lack of run scoring, but I'm going to go ahead and grab him where he's available.
Yeah, I think he's been sneaky good because I've been on the fade Hauser train the last few starts out there, and the more I dig in on him, he's actually proving me wrong. I will be the first to admit that when he's been pretty darn good right now. I'm going to be very, very honest with this one. He's probably not available in many leagues, but the fact that when I opened up my TGFBI free agents and I saw him sitting there, I was like, well, I'm going to bring him up because if he's sitting there in that league, he might be in more leagues than I thought. And that's Akil Baddoo, which I'd be shocked if he is, but I know a lot of people kind of rage dropped him at one point in time because he started out on fire, obviously. Then he just really, really hit the skids. But he has learned to make adjustments, like really good adjustments. He's leading off as we record on Thursday for the second straight day for the Tigers, which is big because I think they're realizing he's not just a power horse anymore. He is a walking machine. Like if you go back to June 11th here, kind of sort this real quick. June 11th, he has collected a hit in each game. That is a total of 2, 5, 9 game hitting streak going into Thursday's game where he's hitting 387. He's got no home runs though, 3 doubles. But the kicker is all of a sudden he's stolen 2 bases over the last 9 games, which I think is a sneaky nice addition to him. And the most important thing, 10.8% K rate with a 16.2% walk rate. Like he has developed plate discipline that you don't see from a lot of young players. So again, probably not on a lot of waiver wires, but the fact I saw him sitting there, I'm going to bring him up. If he's there, if you're looking for outfielders, I go give him a shot right now because I think the power is still going to be around. But right now he's kind of changed his approach at the plate. He's hitting for average, stealing bags, and if he's hitting towards the top of the Tigers lineup, he's going to score runs. So, yeah, Akil Baddoo would be one guy for me.
Yeah, he's actually available in my TGFBI too. He's.
I was shocked to see it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's why we brought him up.
I think one thing to note with him, just kind of a real side point, on your draft champions leagues, I mean, sometimes with these Rule 5 guys like Baddoo, if you could have seen that they have to carry him all year or else he just goes back, you can go grab him. I did the same thing with a guy who's been much worse, Kai Tom, but because he was Rule 5, I was like, hey, 50th round, why not, you know?
Yep. No, I get what you're saying though, because I've even added Kai Tom a couple times this year just when I thought I needed a flyer for a week, and it hasn't turned out great, but we've seen the highs and the lows with him. And the biggest point you mentioned is they can't release him. Otherwise they got to give him back. So they're going to keep him on the roster, and more than likely these aren't great teams. They're going to play him. So see what they got to see if they want to keep him going forward. Who's the second one for you?
Yeah. My second guy, I know I was listening to you and Toby on Tuesday, and Toby kind of wasn't the biggest fan, but Colby Allard is going to get a start against Oakland. Toby made some great points as far as why a blow up could be coming. So tread with caution here, but he's had a pretty good, K to BB. He's going at Oakland. It's a fairly challenging offense, but it's a good park. So if you're needing a start, I think Allard is perfectly fine.
Right. My second, I'm going to mix my list up here because we both have one player together. So I'm going to wait till you mention him and we'll talk about him in a little bit. But my second guy is going to be Nicky Lopez. And this is a guy, I even wrote it up in an article at Rotoballer. I do an article Monday through Friday. And I'm like, I never thought I would write Nicky Lopez in a recommendation article this season. That was my first line. But here we are. And you got Mondesi back on the IL, which it does. Okay, I just can't stay healthy, unfortunately. It really, really stinks to see here. And then if you just look at Nicky Lopez over just the month of June, all this expanded through June, he's been playing really good. He's hitting 340. He's got 2 stolen bases. Both those stolen bases have come like in the last week once he started playing regularly again. He scores runs. So the reason I bring him up is he's the middle infield types where you're always kind of needing guys to stream here and there. And secondly, if you're in need of batting average, this is your guy. Like for now, why he's hitting for average? He's like a Luis Arias type, maybe at least Arias light type situation. Neither one of them is going to give you a lot of power. Going to steal some bags, going to score some runs. Obviously, Arias is in a much better ball club. But if Nicky Lopez is hitting for even over 300, he's hitting well over that right now. In an era where 230 is a good batting average, he's going to help you out a ton. So those teams, like if you have Yasmani Grandal or something like that, this is the kind of guy you need. So I'm going to bring Nicky Lopez up and just ride it while he's hot is what I would say.
Absolutely. I mean, the team's forced to play him. He's their only shortstop. Yeah. He was supposed to be a big prospect a few years ago, and it sometimes takes these guys a few years, even though most people wrote him off. So I dig that one.
All right. Who's your next one?
Yeah, so the next one here, again, I try to make this point, even though it might be obvious to some, just be careful with these streamers. Mike Foltynewicz, he's got a two-start coming up here. He's going to be at Oakland and at Seattle. I don't think he's a great pitcher, but those are some decent parks to pitch in. And if you're chasing that volume, I think you can do it with Folty.
Yeah, he picked up a very nice outing on Wednesday night to the detriment of my DFS lineups, but he did. He's another one of those guys, like kind of like Savali to me. Savali I like better than Folty, don't get me wrong, but they're either on for the night or you're going to know by like the second inning what you're getting. Like it's going to be one or the other with these guys. So, yeah, we'll see. All right, my next one, again, was available in GFBI, and he's actually available in more leagues than you'd think because Michael Fulmer was dropped when he got hurt. People thought Gregory Soto or Cisnero were going to be the closers, and they've been very good, but Fulmer got back, and he's already jumped right back in the closers role. He's gotten a couple saves, and they're showcasing him to trade him. So if you're in need of saves, which a lot of teams are, go grab Michael Fulmer. That's the best thing I can say. Be ready to the recommendation I gave on a previous podcast with Toby is be ready like a week or two before the trade deadline to grab Cisnero or Soto and stash them, but ride Fulmer while you can. He's getting a couple save chances a week. This Tigers team is not a great team, but they're sneaky better than like they're competitive more often than not. So he's going to run into a couple save chances a week. So Michael Fulmer is one of my guys.
Absolutely.
Who's your next one?
Yeah. So the next guy here, and I hate putting these caveats out there, but I just want to try to give a little bit further context. And if he does keep starting today and this weekend, I haven't checked lineup since we started here, but Daz Cameron was a prospect of note. I kind of started going for him in dynasties last year just because his bat is underwhelming, but I thought there was a Christian Pache kind of thing you could have in a deep league where he just plays good defense out there and is fine. He's hit a few homers. He's stolen a base or two. And I mean, Detroit, they would be very wise to see what he has. So if Daz Cameron is out there, I would definitely throw a few shekels his way.
Yep. That's the guy I had on my list as number two. I'm like, okay. I'm going to wait till Lucas brings him up because I was kind of skeptical at first, kind of how I've mentioned with most prospects I am. For anybody that's listening to this show long enough knows I'm usually hesitant to go at prospects, but I am going to put bids in on Cameron this week because one thing you mentioned for sure is they have no reason not to see what he has. Like they called him up, so play him. It's that simple. Like otherwise leave him down. You can list off the other outfield options in Detroit. Like you have Grossman and Bedu, sure, but after that, like really, what are we fighting with here? So Daz definitely get a shot. Like you mentioned, his first few games looked a little shaky, like he was getting his feet wet, but he's now hit safely in five straight games going into Thursday with homers in two out of his last three. He's stolen a base in each of his last two games, still at 33% K rate. So that's always concerning. But that's the thing you see with a lot of these young guys. It's like the new, it's not justifiable, but it's like this new era of baseball. It's just what these guys do. Like I talked about it many times. Go look at Steven Duggar's numbers. The dude strikes out like 40-something percent of the time. But when he puts the ball in play, it's amazing. So it's tilting. It's very tilting. And maybe that's why there are more streamers than full-time. But you mentioned with Daz Cameron, he's got that prospect pedigree. He's obviously got the family pedigree. He's going to be he feels like he should be on the Blue Jays with the rest of the with all those. Like he should be with them, with the Guerreros and the Bichettes and the Biggios. But he's not. But I'm with you. Daz Cameron, I'm kind of kicking myself for not grabbing him a week ago because he's going to go for some good money this week. But I would definitely put some bids in on him, even if it's keep him on his bids, because maybe some people overlook him. I think he's going to have a good run in him the rest of this year.
Absolutely. Those are the best prospects to go for since your investment level is, what, maybe 20 to 30 bucks or something like that. So you can cut bait, no biggie.
Yep, I have no problem. Like I even mentioned it a few weeks ago with Jackson Coar. I figured, you know, he had that first blow up. I'm like, okay, I still think he's a good prospect. We saw he didn't AAA. Obviously, since that's all taken place, he got demoted. Like he's back in AAA. But things looked good. So I got him like the week after the blow-ups for like 15 to 20 bucks. And I'm like, okay, I'll take that chance now because I can go cut him and not worry so much. Like, do I want that money in September? Yes, but I'm not spending $180 anymore either. So I'll take those chances. Do you have a fifth one for us?
Yeah, fifth one. These types of guys, this kind of guy is probably not available, but I would just keep an eye out on your injury kind of guys. You mentioned Tommy La Stella. I saw he actually was heading to AAA. To get his rhythm going and get ready to play with the Giants again. My guy's Eloy Jimenez. He's possibly available in some NFBCs. and other guys are going to have the same thoughts as me. Go ahead and stash them now if you have the luxury. Now, if you're banged up, obviously this is a no-go, but if you have that luxury, he did start baseball activities at the complex. So if you want to grab him, I would say this week or maybe a week from now is the time.
Yeah, 100% on board with you there. If you have any roster spot where you can stash him, I'd grab Eloy if you could, because it felt like he wasn't supposed to play the rest of the year. Like, it was all the initial prognosis, and then all of a sudden he's starting activities, and if you get him for a month and a half to 2 months now, that's tremendous. So this is a guy that was a top 2 to 3 round pick, and now in a 15-team league. So now you're going to get him for a couple months off the waiver wires. Pretty darn cool. So I'm with you there. The last guy I'll mention, it's more of a grouping. Check your waiver wire. The Rockies play 7 games next week in Coors Field. So go check out to see like your Jonathan Dazas, your Fuentes, these guys that usually you're only streaming, and this is what you're doing. You're streaming them for Colorado. So go check your wire for that. But also, Pittsburgh plays 3 and St. Louis plays 4. So if you want to go and check those guys, you might have a better chance of grabbing some. Like Newt Barr got called up for St. Louis. Maybe all of a sudden he's playing, he gets 4 games in Coors Field. Go check that out, or some of these other options that are out there for the two teams. All right. What 2-star pitchers are you looking at next week? And obviously this could still change because pitching is just the guys that are going to be throwing next week change all the time. So who do you got now?
So my 2-star guys, I mentioned one of them earlier, Foltynewicz. I've not really been a big fan of his over his career, but the matchups are right, and I have to give guys who are actually available. So he is going to be mentioned. Another one that's pitching better of late. It's tough, though, because your Giants are a frisky little team there. But a leap of faith, if you wanted to go for it, is Caleb Smith. He's getting his strikeouts back for the Diamondbacks, and he's looking better. But like I said, just be careful in your ratios with these guys.
No, Caleb Smith's the first guy I wrote down, too. He's pitching really well. And like daily leagues, I have picked him up and streamed him for his last few starts. He looked really good against Milwaukee. Milwaukee's offense obviously isn't the best of offenses, but Smith, since going back to the rotation, has looked really good. So he's even one of those guys that you can grab and potentially stream off and on the rest of the season on your bench. Like, I think he's at least in 15-team leagues. I could see him as an option there that he'll have some viability the rest of the way. So I'm with you on Smith. The only other guy I mentioned because there's like, you know, I want to do Danny Duffy, but he only threw 2 innings on Wednesday, so they're going to baby him back in. But I'm still a believer in what we saw before his injury. So he's just if you want to speculatively add someone pretty soon, keep an eye on Duffy. Spencer Howard's coming back in the rotation. I'm not a Spencer Howard fan. Are you a Spencer Howard fan at all? Because he has not shown it to me yet.
I know James Anderson's been high on him, and obviously his opinions change as we get more info. And I was tepidly interested in adding him, but then I saw the whip, and I know the lack of track record. I mean, he could be lightning in a bottle. These guys can make a change and change their true talent, but I didn't list him just because I think there's a bit of downside with him.
I just don't think he's going to go deep enough yet. Like, yeah, they're still working on the strikeouts. Like, if you need strikeouts, that's a guy for you. But there's still, like, the massive blow-up potential is scary with Spencer Howard. So he's not a guy I'm going to add. I just wanted to get your thoughts on him because he does have 2 starts. Mm-hmm. One's versus Miami. The other one's versus San Diego. And they're both at home in Philadelphia. But the other guy I will bring up, and I wasn't really on him this week because his first start didn't show me a lot, and he was getting shelled in the minor leagues. But Matt Manning has 2 starts next week. First one's at Cleveland. I like that. Mm-hmm. Second one's at home against the White Sox. That's a little more suspect. So it just kind of depends on your risk tolerance and how deep of a league you're in. But he's gone 5 innings in both starts, 2 earned runs in both starts, but no strikeouts. That's the other caveat that really concerns me with him. So I'm not pretty much the only guy I really like this week so far is Caleb Smith going into it. Because if you look at the 2-start options, it's a lot of studs this week. So they're pretty much all rostered as we speak. Couple listener questions, and we'll head on out of here. Our boy Michael Carter, he's an awesome dude. He was on the show a couple weeks ago. He had a couple questions for you. You guys are buddies because I know you guys have done some shows together. First off, he asks, where does Lucas find the time to do all his work?
Well, as I alluded earlier, I was not cranking out articles necessarily to begin the year, but I don't know, just kind of you do a lot more work than me, so you're more the guy to ask because you're doing your DFS every day and waking up at 5 a.m. and getting that going. But you just got to plan it out, I guess. I mean,
pretty much
make your schedule and go from there.
Yep. Just schedule around it and make the time for what you have. And if not, don't commit to it. That's like, that'd be the easiest thing, is because it's tough. But his other question's a good one, because Matt Chapman was a target of a lot of people, a lot of smart people going into the season, looking for the bounce back off the hip injury, all that good stuff. Got off to a really rough start, but man, oh man, has he taken off since then? He has a 11-game hitting streak going into Thursday. I'm not sure if he got a hit on Thursday, where he's hitting 341 with four homers over that stretch. He's doing everything. So he wanted to know, what's our thoughts on Matt Chapman? And personally, to make it easy for me, I'm a big fan, but what's your thoughts on Matt Chapman?
Yeah, I'm a big fan too. Years prior to this year, I hadn't necessarily had much stock in him just because he was fairly expensive. But this year was perfect. I mean, you get into that 110 to 140 range. There's not a lot of guys that stick out to you as absolute studs. But I mean, if Chapman's healthy, I think he's a three category beast. Like you said, the injury has plagued him. And I didn't think it would, because he's such an athletic guy. He's very mobile and best defender, one of the best defenders at third. I thought he'd be fine, but it made him struggle. Like you said, he's felt a lot better. And depending on how the narrative shifts around him, it might just be, hey, he wasn't healthy and now he is, and he's fully priced. If that happens next year, not sure I'm going to be paying, you know, top 90 or top 80. But if he's around the same range as this year, I'll be all over him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he's a great pick. One thing about him is his defense is so great, he's always going to be on the field. So you don't have to worry about that. And his, you know, the production was always wonky, but if you looked at like his StatCast pages, his quality of content, it was always hit hard. He was always barreling things up. It was one of those things, a lot of smart people said it, and it made sense. He could be like one of those, if everything starts to click for him, he could be a 40 home run guy. Like, he's that talented. I don't see it happening just yet, but the tools are there. So I like Chapman quite a bit going forward. I think he's ready to rock and roll for a big second half of the season. The other question he asks, who is one starting pitcher I should be targeting for a second half surge?
Yeah, so I had a tricky time with this one, but I came up with two names, and I tried to go a little bit more available. One is going to be a little bit more expensive because he's had a lot more success. Patrick Sandoval, he's shown a great changeup, and he's just been really good the past few games. He was a big prospect with the Astros and was a casualty of their system. And the other guy I have that we actually mentioned was Cal Quantrill. This is more bet on the Cleveland system. The fact he's going to get pretty good matchups for most of his in-division games outside of the White Sox. And I think he's going to be fairly affordable as well in a trade, or maybe even available on the waiver wire.
I like both of those quite a bit. A couple just off the top of my head I'll mention is, like, honestly, I think Caleb Smith is interesting. We talked about him already. I think he could be one that you can use off and on. Last episode, we recapped last week's fab. I believe Ross Stripling is a guy you could roll with going forward. I think there's a lot to like with the changes he's made there, and looks more like that guy we used to love. And then I think I'm just going to die on this sword. I've said it pretty much everywhere that anybody's asked me, and I understand if people don't want to take the plunge, but I am still a massive believer in Eduardo Rodriguez. I really am. Like, I know the overall numbers don't look great, but if you like go under the hood here, it's a 6.07 ERA, but it's a 3.65 FIP and a 3.51 xFIP. And then you look at like the important stuff, you know, the K to walks, like the best of his career at 20.8%. He still has a 27% K rate. He's limiting all the hard contact, which is outstanding. If you look at even deeper stuff, there's 11.1% swinging strike rate. Contact rate's about average at 77%. So it's just not clicking all there, but even he went six innings, three earned, seven Ks yesterday. I think there's more there with him. I really do. And I might be wrong. I think people are expecting the Cy Young potential of Erod, and that might not be there this year, but I think there's more to what he is. And at anything, he's either been rage dropped or you could get him for really cheap in a trade. And I think he's worth gambling on compared to some other guys. Could be wrong. I might die on that sword.
No, I actually, it's funny that you mentioned him. I actually offered up a league mate of yours, Can Doe, offered him up in a dynasty league, Nolan Jones, this week for Eduardo Rodriguez. Unfortunately, got shot down. He didn't want to sell low. I understand that. Yeah. But I think Rodriguez will be able to provide those Ks, and he has too much talent to do this. He's way better than this.
That's how I feel. Like, I know there's sometimes we kind of have those rose-colored glasses on when we're watching our fantasy guys that we just like, and it's hard to accept they're just not good right now or something. But even when I look at the numbers, I'm like, he's really not this bad. Like, it's just, it's like one hit here or there just blows up the whole thing. And that's what it is. So I'm going to keep riding him and see what happens. I think eventually he's going to pay off big, and there's going to be a DFS night where he's going to make all the money because he's priced down every time now. So it's going to be beautiful. John Dobos asks, what is up with Ian Happ and Willie Calhoun?
Happ, I actually did write about him in that Stock Down article you were mentioning. His ground balls are just a little bit too high for me to feel comfortable that he is going to have a power surge. I mean, he's well over 50% ground balls. He's another guy similar to Grandal. He's looking for the walk. He's a big on base percentage guy. His batting average is always going to probably be poor for fantasy baseball, in my opinion. And perhaps he could turn it on, but I wouldn't bet on him for this year. But in an on-base percentage dynasty, he's still fairly young. I like him in those types of deals.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on half there. I think the talent's still super, super good. I think we all had high hopes on like 30 home runs or something. That wasn't going to be it. That's more the Jock Peterson on the team. But he's there to lead off, get on base, maybe hit 20-something homers. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned the ground ball rates. He just needs to go to the school of Lodito, and they'll figure it out. So he's not too far off. I wouldn't be too worried about him. Just might not be coming this season. Yeah. What about Willie Calhoun for you? Because Calhoun's interesting. He's getting hits. He's hit safely in like 10 of his last 12. He just has no power this season.
Yeah, Calhoun was one of the other ones. I was looking at John's question, and Happ was pretty straightforward for me to try to figure that one out. Calhoun, I can't figure out why he's been so poor. His contact has been right there. He's a very low strikeout guy, which is awesome to see for the RBIs and hopefully batting average. The power dried up, but maybe he got lucky in 2019. But this was a guy that popped 21 homers in 83 games that year, which is amazing rate, obviously. But this year, I mean, he's not hitting too many ground balls. He's got a perfectly decent launch angle. His barrels are low, but he's not a big, really masher per se. He's more of just a contact, put it in play kind of guy. And since I can't really figure out what's wrong with him, I would assume maybe he'll bounce back. I'm not sure where you're at, but I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I'm still trusting it. As long as the Rangers keep running him out there, I'm gonna trust it. I've always said with that team, it's a very bad baseball team, but they have a ton of offensive talent around them. So it's one of those, if Calhoun keeps figuring it out, he's going to start helping you in every category, basically. So I think he's definitely a guy to ride with. As long as he keeps hitting for average, it's going to give him a chance to score runs. And eventually, if he starts figuring out maybe to elevate it a little more, maybe barrel a few up, he's going to run into some home runs. So I wouldn't run away too quick on him. Unlike, you know, Ian Happ, where there's like clear signs of concern. At first glance, it's really tough to get too mad at Calhoun. Like the bad X still has him hitting 10 homers, scoring 32 runs, driving in 33, and hitting .247 the rest of the way. That's not a bad season. So I'd ride with that and see what happens. Like all the projection sites have him for at least 10 home runs the rest of the way. And he's only got 5 so far this year. So, and the bad X takes into like StatCast and all that kind of stuff that takes into account everything we're looking at. And so I think I'd stay positive on that one is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, these are guys that are just really interesting to buy in Dynasty because the other owners worried. I mean, if you have Gleyber Torres, are you really going to be willing to sell low on Torres? You're probably not as worried, but a fringier player like Calhoun, you're like, all right, I'll just take what I can get.
That's smart. That's very smart. That's how you improve things because Calhoun, people forget, is still very, very young. Mm-hmm. And he was once a very, very high prospect in the Dodgers system. So there's lots to love with that pedigree. And it's always been an offensive pedigree. So there's something there for sure. Last question. I'm guessing Lee Keeler is in your Dynasty League by chance? Or no?
Yes, he is, and he offered me a trade yesterday.
So he says, why does Lucas think in an OBP slugging 20-team Dynasty that Alex Verdugo is better by a wide margin over a healthy Brandon Nimmo?
Yeah, so this is that insanely deep situation that I was talking about with the Darren Ruff. I was looking for some starting pitching, and he offered me up a deal that I will agree it was better than I gave it credit for. But he came knocking for Alex Verdugo, who's pretty much one of my core pieces at this point.
Yeah, especially in an OBP league.
Yeah, and so much younger than Nimmo. Well, about 3-4 years. But I don't know. The fact that Nimmo has some neck issues has me kind of worried for his long term. I know Verdugo had back issues, so I kind of thought, you know, that's a slight concern, but it hasn't popped up. He did also tack on Caleb Smith, so I'll give Lee a little bit of credit. But if I'm going to trade away Verdugo, that's just a package I wouldn't do for it.
Yeah, I'm with you on Verdugo in a Dynasty / OBP format, especially the depth you're going. Like, I like Nimmo, don't get me wrong, especially in an OBP.
Absolutely.
But the dude just, unfortunately, can't stay healthy either. Mm-hmm. So, like, he's still on the IL. Like he's been, it was supposed to be a short-term thing, I thought, and it just continues to go and go and go. So I'm with you there. Like, I like Nimmo a lot. At the same time, I love Verdugo. I love what he's doing. And also, you got Verdugo in that Boston lineup compared to Nimmo in New York, which the Mets lineup's improved. Don't get me wrong. It's much improved. I'll still take my chances in Boston. And we said it earlier with Wander Franco. Look at the ballparks and the pitching staffs Verdugo gets to face compared to what Nimmo gets to face with the Mets. And Nimmo might platoon with Kevin Pillar at times, which is always so much fun. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going against Nimmo for now. 5 years from now, we might think this is a bad idea. But that's the crazy part about Dynasty is you're trading for the now, but you're also trading for the future. And so trying to weigh all that out is pretty fun. But all right, Lucas, that'll wrap us up for today. Any closing thoughts as we're almost halfway through the fantasy baseball season?
I'm just going to point out there just to make sure that you're diligent on your bids to keep your keep them honest bids in there. Make sure you're super locked in on those lineups just so you don't have a DH go into the NL or something, because other guys will. I mean, people have families and vacations and little things will slip through the cracks. But my personal opinion, I'm going to do the best I can to set these lineups and to try to scrap as much as I can and see what happens.
Yep, that's a good point. And then you also made some points. Look for some of these guys going on rehab. LaStella, Eloy, go get them now if you can, or at least closer to their return. Don't wait till the week they return, and you'll get some potential starters at a massive discount. So those are the little things that will help you along the way. Last question I have for you. Your Twitter handle is LucasBeery33. Larry Bird?
Big Larry Bird guy.
I know you're a Hoosier, so I had to ask.
He's okay. One of my favorite players, so for sure.
Who do you got? Who do you have winning the NBA Finals? I know you're a basketball guy too.
You know, I was thinking it would be one of the Nets, Bucks, and then I had the Suns as well in there. And I'm going to keep with the Bucks and the Suns, even though the Hawks continue to prove me wrong. I can't believe that we're seeing Trae Young in the conference finals before we're seeing Luka Doncic. I don't understand that, but yeah, it's happened.
Bananas. Like, part of me likes the chaos because it shows that sports is awesome. But at the same time, it's like, I want to see X player all the time. So
I know.
It's the bright side of it is like, I've been a Kings fan. I lived up by Sacramento. I still root for them. I like the Warriors because I'm closer to them now. Regardless, when the Lakers get eliminated, I'm always happy. Like that was, I know most TV places aren't happy about that, but I was just like, yes, beautiful.
Yeah.
So that works for me. But all right, we'll wrap it up with that. Make sure everybody follows Lucas on Twitter at LucasBeery33. Go check out the LuCast podcast with Lucas and Lou Landers, and check out his written content at Fantasy Sports DGens. But Lucas, thanks for joining me, my friend. Had a great time.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 381, talking some fantasy baseball with Lucas Beery. Catch you guys later.
Better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.